This is Linda Harrell, April 18th, 1984. We're interviewing Mary Kay Anderson. Ms. Anderson?
Hello, it's nice to meet you.
I'm going to try to remember some of the things that has occurred in my life since being in Rock Springs and even before. I came to Rock Springs in 1941. I had a teaching position here. I attended the University of Wyoming, where I met the superintendent of schools here in Rock Springs, Mr. E.M. Thompson, who was a really very outstanding educator in the state of Wyoming. He was very well thought of. And so he interviewed me, and I thought it would be rather exciting to come to Rock Springs. I had been in Wyoming for a number of summers visiting my relatives lived in Evanston, Wyoming. But I think I'll backtrack a little bit now and tell you a little bit about where I was born and where my education before coming to Rock Springs. I was born in a small town in eastern part of Kansas. It was close to the University of Kansas, Lawrence, Kansas. And I got my early schooling in this small town of Linwood. My parents were hard-working people, natives of the state of Kansas, and my dad owned a general merchandise store, and so I helped him as I grew up. I helped him with the clerking in the store. I had three brothers, and I was the only girl in the family, so I was probably slightly spoiled, but I did get my way a great deal around home. But growing up was quite an interesting experience in a little town. You become pretty well acquainted with everybody who lived there. And I had a lot of fun while I was in high school. I was quite active in music and in drama. And I was also a 4-H club girl, so I learned to sew and cook. And after graduating, to the University of Kansas, where I attended for 2 years. And then this was about the time when we were having some economic problems in our fair city, right after the crash and the difficulties in the marketplaces. So I had to go to work instead of going ahead and completing my 4 years at the University of Kansas. So I got a teaching position. I received what they call an associate degree after 2 years, and taught in a little rural school rather close to my hometown. And I taught there for 4 years. And then my father passed away about this time, and I, my mother decided to come out and make her home with my older brother, who lived in Evanston, Wyoming. And so that is really what brought me to Wyoming. I spent my summers in Wyoming, and I sort of fell in love with the state. And I had an opportunity to teach in a small town near Evanston. And so I taught in a little community of Lyman, Wyoming. And the people there were so friendly, and it was just a delightful experience. And then, as I mentioned before, I went to the university summer school and finished and got my degree from the University of Wyoming. And it was there that I became acquainted with Mr. Thompson, and he convinced me that I should go to Rock Springs. And the fall that I started teaching in Rock Springs, I first started in teaching in the Yellowstone School, which is at the two or three blocks from where I'm now living. And I taught in Yellowstone for 2 years. And then I met a very nice young man from Rock Springs, Mr. Anderson. And I was married in 1946. But I continued teaching because I have always been dedicated to the teaching field. And I continued teaching for 2 years, and then I decided that I would like to go to Salt Lake City, and I worked up there for a couple of years, but I returned since I still had my interest in Rock Springs. And so I've been teaching in Rock Springs. I guess I was, could be called and promoted. I went to junior high school and taught music in the junior high school, which has now, it was for many years, the district education building, but now since the district education building has been built, a new building has is now in use out at, I can't recall what the name of the street, this mountain view, I view some of the sort of way, and they now have a large staff of secretaries taking care of the business of our educational staff. And so I was transferred from junior high to high school in 1963, and I taught there until I retired in 1975. And I think you probably would consider me as a pretty dedicated person, because ever since I have retired, I have been doing substitute teaching and just enjoy it thoroughly. I always say it kind of keeps me on my toes, and I have always enjoyed the rapport with my students. I think now I perhaps give them the grandma image, because they've always been very respectful, and just the enjoy teaching. I enjoy teaching. I teach mostly in junior high and high school. The city of Rock Springs, I'd like to tell you just a little bit about some of the changes that have been taking place. When I came to Rock Springs in 1941, I was decided I'd stay in a lady's home. I visited Mrs. Rapaski, who lived on 529 B Street, just a couple of blocks down from where I'm now presently living. And Mr. and Mrs. Rapaski were Czechoslovakian people, and they were just so very hospitable, and I stayed there for over 2 years when I was teaching at Yellowstone. It was only a few blocks from where I was teaching. And I remember when I first came to Rock Springs, I was just a little lonely. I missed the pretty trees and the shrubs, and like most people who come to Rock Springs, that is one of the things that is a little different if you come from an area where there is more vegetation and more wildlife, flowers and so forth. But I recall making a statement with Mrs. Rapaski that, oh, this is a terrible place to live. And Mrs. Rapaski became just a little irritated at me. She said, well, you know, Mary Kay, when you came here, we didn't ask you to come. That was your decision. And it made me think, well, I guess I didn't have any room to be making complaints. But after being here a while, the people were just extremely friendly. And at that time, I had been told by many of the native people of Rock Springs that at one time there had been 58 nationalities located here, and about that many different languages were spoken. But there were an abundance of Italian people and the Slavs, many of those, and they had their native dances, and they had the various types of holidays that they would celebrate. And I was particularly impressed with the early celebrations of I guess it was the wine celebration in the fall. I forgot what they called the Great Festival, I believe was the terminology. They would have their native dancers, and the old Slavinsky dome was decorated with the beautiful fall decorations, particularly the grapes. They sent in a lot of the grapes, just huge carloads of grapes were sent in. And the, oftentimes, especially in the surrounding areas, I'm thinking particularly of Superior, and they had 2 or 3 days holiday where the children would be allowed to take off, and they would go to the places where they were preparing the grapes and take off their shoes and stockings and stamp the grapes, which was sounded a little bit strange to me. I couldn't quite visualize people getting in. First question I ask, well, you do wash your feet, don't you, before you stamp the grapes and squeeze the juices out. And he said, well, what difference would it make up for a man? So it doesn't matter at all about the whether or not the feet have been clean. But that turned me off on some of the, they called it oftentimes the Dago Red, is what they sometimes call their natural drink. And of course, you didn't go to any of these Italian homes without them insisting upon trying their grape wines that they had prepared themselves. And some of them, that's part of the time, if you weren't accustomed to drinking, it was pretty strong. But they were very, very hospitable. And I recall I did have a little difficulty when I first started teaching, trying to master the names and calling the roll. The children would get quite a kick out of the way I staggered and struggled over saying some of the names, particularly the Basque names. I recall the name of Aramaspi was quite a challenge to me, and the Radosoviches and the Karakabura and some of those names, and these people are still very leading citizens here in our community, and I have since learned how to say the names a little better. But the climatic conditions, I think, are very much the same as they have been. We have pretty severe winters. Sometimes I think that a few years go by where we don't have quite as much snow as we did in the when I first came to Rock Springs. But this past winter has certainly made up for some of the more mild winters and weather conditions that we have had. The wind always was always was kind of irritating to me. I think the city physically has made many, many changes, as I think all the old timers will tell you. We started out here, I think there were about five schools, including the high school and the one junior high, and it has increased now. We have about 13 buildings for our school. The elementary grades, I believe we have about 9, of course, 2 junior high in the high school, and it seems that every year we have to do a little adding on, because during the early 80s, about 78 through about 82, we had quite a population explosion here when the Trona mines opened, and many people came in from other parts of the country for jobs, and so we did have quite a boom. Many, many houses have been built, and of course the malls and the various stores that have been built since then. It really was quite a change from the rather peaceful, quiet little town into this booming conditions where houses were so scarce, and many people who had garages and little rental shacks on their property would open it up for people to move in, and that's before they really had enough homes for people to live in. And many of the hills surrounding Rock Springs were dotted with campers and with motor homes. It really was quite a population explosion here. But I think we coped with it very well, particularly our school system, when we knew that there were going to be these Trona mines, and of course our coal mines have been in existence since the town started. We were prepared somewhat in our educational system, thanks to our superintendent of schools and our school board members. They have been pretty well prepared in building adequate space for the newcomers. But I recall we, as teachers, were confronted with some rather severe problems in crowded classrooms, where we had been having maybe 25 to 30 in the classroom. Some of the classrooms were increased to 30, 40, and sometimes even 50 people in the classroom. So we were sort of bursting at the seams until we got new buildings provided for these youngsters. but it's been quite an education for the people of Rock Springs, meeting some of these interesting people from other parts of the country. And of course, they coming in were quite opinionated as far as what the situation was that we had to offer here. It was a little bit difficult for some of the people to accept the lack of the facilities that they had been used to, probably. But it was, I think, kind of a give and take. We had to understand them, and they certainly had to get accustomed to what we had to offer. But we even are getting some lovely parks, and I think that we've made great strides considering the time when I first came here. We probably, you could count the number of trees, probably, maybe down in some of the areas where they could get a little more water, but they did have some gardens, but not very much in the way of vegetation. I think that's the thing that most people missed when they first came here. But can you think of anything else now that you might like to have me talk about?
You were saying when you first came here that the town was small. What did it look like to you when you arrived?
Well, I recall, of course, the dryness is the thing that I think impressed me most unfavorably. And there quite a few, and notice out of the surrounding areas where the homes now are built, that was just the barren hillsides, of course. They weren't all these homes. And the mall now, as you have the belt loop going through where the homes are built, that was all just plain barren sagebrush. So it really was it's quite different, I think, just the appearance.
How big was the school system when you came?
I think that we had about 85 people. It seems to me we had a directory published, and 85 included all the faculty and the secretaries. So that is quite a really quite a comparison to what we have now. It was probably increased 3 or 4 times, I'm sure. But we did have a very fine rapport among the small groups of faculty members, but I'm not just sure how many people we did have in the school system, but the last survey they took, it seems to me we had around 1,000 people in the high school, and then the 2 junior highs, each had around 300 or 400 each. So I think that it has, of course, doubled and probably tripled at least. But I think our population, too, has really increased. It seems to me we were around probably about 10,000, I recall, the population. And I think it's about 20,000, so that's the population has doubled.
You were saying there weren't many buildings, though, in Canada.
No, quite a few of the, now they had the old City Hall, of course, which stands now, it's becoming a, I think they've just classified it as a historical landmark here. And the police department was located right in the same building, and the post office was located here on B Street. A number of the buildings right downtown remained about the same. Many of them are becoming rather empty at the present time. But of course, a lot of the businesses now have moved out to the malls. But I think the housing around the surrounding areas is what has really increased, and we find that that has changed a great deal. But the town itself has become rather stagnant, just sort of the same idea. Now, we lived in a small home when my husband and I were first married, down next to the Eagles, and the sense of remove that house and take it out to Blairtown, I think. But the town, I would say, has kind of remained unchanged. I don't think, other than the new City Hall, and of course the schools are built in the outlying area, so it hasn't made a whole lot of difference in the town itself. The old McCurtain garage that was removed from its location on A and 2nd Street was just torn down and raised just last this past year. And that corner looks very, very different to me as I go by and see a parking lot there rather than that old building of the Curtin Garage where we bought our cars from Mr. Curtin back in probably the first car I think that we owned in 1941 was bought from the Curtin. So that building is we missed that, I think, because of the buildings. But there has been the telephone building that was remodeled and built a few years ago, too. And there have been a few changes as time has passed by.
What was it like as a new bride in Las Vegas, the access to things? What did you do?
Well, I just fit in without any difficulty because I continued teaching, and so it really wasn't a particularly a different situation. I think the fact that I was older than when I was married, and my husband was my senior too by a few years, so we didn't we just fit right in. He was a native of Rock Springs, having been born here at the turn of the century. And so he was very well acquainted with everyone in Rock Springs, so I think I didn't have any problems at all. Mm-hmm.
What did you do for entertainment?
Well, most of the entertainment that we enjoyed dancing. We had quite a little of dancing, bridge playing. Of course, I was quite busy with the numerous organizations that I belonged to. I was quite active in the Women's Club and the PEO and AUW, most of the educational types of activities. And my husband was quite a good golfer, so we and I played golf, and we enjoyed that during the summer months. We had a very remarkable, I'll never forget the first golf course we had. It was built out in the area just east of town. It was called the Dead Horse Canyon, a golf course, and it was a bare course, and not just the close game, but we had to fight rattlesnakes and sagebrush when we were got off of the course. So, and with the wind and the dirt and the dust on that bare field, you had to be a real champion to be able to put up with the physical conditions, because it was really a very difficult course. I often thought if you could hit par on that course, you could play most any place in the entire area. But it was fun. We enjoyed that, and they had quite a lot of social activities. They had a nice clubhouse that they built there, and we had dances and dinner parties and luncheons there. So that was one of our chief bits of entertainment.
Is the golf course still out there?
No, now it has been turned into a trailer course. There are a lot of trailers that there are new golf courses out north of town, and it's quite different. It's really a beautiful course with all the green grass and the water that has been provided for it. That, of course, was the big problem here, was the fact that we didn't have enough water. We brought our water from Green River, of course, as we still do, but we had to be very, very conservative when it came to water. We didn't have very much lawn, and I still have little pangs of conservatism when I think of the water we pour on our grass now to make it grow.
Thinking about it just reminds me of when I came, but that's not so good.
Yes, but you probably, I think most everyone who comes here do, they do have a feeling of the arid conditions and the wind blowing, and I think that but most everyone, I think, like my situation was that after you've been here a while, you do find that everyone welcomes you, and it's kind of a warm, hospitable feeling that I think most people agree that that kind of compensates somewhat for the lack of some of the beauties that you find. But
I've even learned when my husband loved to hunt, that we would go out in the South Country during the elk and the deer and antelope season and hunt a game. And we would oftentimes just take the rides out on Sunday. And I found the rock formation so very fascinating. I think it's just beautiful. And at first, when we used to go out, my husband would stop beside the road and say, "Now, isn't that pretty?" And I'd look at the rocks, and I didn't particularly see anything too attractive about them. And as you saw the sun setting on these the rocks and the formations, the changing of the sky, and of course, I don't think that there are many places that have any more beautiful blue skies than in the area around southwestern Wyoming. So I really truly learned, I think, vicariously. At first, I couldn't quite see the beauty, but after you've been here a while, you do see the things that are very attractive. So I quite learned to enjoy walking through the sagebrush and kind of enjoying the outdoors. So it kind of grows on one, I think.
You were saying earlier you involved in music and drama, and that. Mm-hmm. And just before we started our interview, you said your husband belonged to a family.
Oh yes, I was going to tell you that we had an outstanding little group of people that they got together through the sponsorship of Mr. McAuliffe, who was a Scotchman that was president of the Union Pacific Railroad. He lived in Omaha, but he and my husband, Art, were real good friends. So they got together and decided that a Kelsey band would be something that would be worthwhile to get established here. And with the help of two or three of the native Scotch people here in Rock Springs, there was Alec Davidson, who was really a true Scotchman, that was a drum, or he was a pipe major, and my husband was a drum major. So they got together and had a very colorful band. And Mr. McAuliffe went to Scotland and purchased the uniforms, a beautiful Royal Stewart was the tartan that belonged to his family. And these uniforms were just absolutely gorgeous, very expensive. They provided them for the, we had about 25 people, men who at one time they had worked for the Union Pacific. It was rather interesting that we had all these various nationalities, the Minginis and the Radosoviches, and we had this very unusual group of people. When they put their names on the program, everybody was astounded at some of these names, that they all called them Scotch people when they were in the band. It was a Scotch Billy band. But they provided very unusual music. Of course, people who aren't familiar with the bagpipes, they think they're a little weird, but they were very melodious. I thought I enjoyed it thoroughly. And they had the old-timers parades every year, and they would have other various functions, and the Kelly band would get out in all their glory, and they really looked very sharp, and they played quite well after they had been in existence for a number of years. They were quite expert. In fact, many of them, they took the band to a number of places. I recall they were rated very high in California when they went to Los Angeles a couple of times to perform. So they really were a very outstanding organization.
You said a little earlier that you like to go dancing. Where did you go dancing?
Well, now, most of the time our parties were private parties, or at the Elks home. They had a lovely club room there and a dancing place. And then I think that the Slavinsky Dome, that was another place where they had the dances. And,
what is this Slavinsky Dome?
Well, I'm now that's a Slovenian group of people that they it's down on Bridger Avenue. It's another historical landmark. It's a place, just a kind of an auditorium in the dance hall, where they have their parties, and that's where they have the great festivals each fall. And that was quite a colorful
place for the people there. Mostly Slovenian people were the ones that belong back out there. And one time they had the Union Hall there, and they met there for their social activities.
Do you find it's harder today to find a place for that kind of social activity?
Well, I really think it is rather difficult because, of course, as we're older, we don't particularly go into that particular field. I don't do any dancing. And my husband died in 1960. And so we do quite a lot of people here enjoy playing bridge. We have many of the groups that play bridge. And then we have motels, or the hotels have dining rooms, and they have halls, dinner places, you know, where they can get together for dinner parties. And the Hilton has a rather nice patio. Of course, the Outlaw Inn is one of the nicer places where you can go and eat and have various entertainment. Just last week, there were fashion show there, and those are some of the things that people are interested in.
You are interested in, again, music and drama.
Yes.
There is a concert association. Is there anything like that when you came to Oxford?
Yes, now we did have a drama club that was quite active. We put on the plays, and we had one time we had a city community theater, it was called. And they had a beautiful old theater here that it just broke my heart when they decided to tear it down, because it would have been definitely considered a historical landmark. It was down on Front Street, and it was in the lower levels, an old theater, and it was so rather unusual in the architectural design. It was just really an outstanding old theater, and that was about in the 60s, I think, that we used to put on three-act plays, you know, and we had helped to usually with the director for the plays, and we had a good time getting together and producing those plays, and they were very well received by the community. But the Union Hall was located in the upper, on the upper floor. And I think they decided that maybe it was should have been condemned because it was going to become ruin. And I think that they decided to tear the building down. And many, many people were really protested the move. There was nothing we could do about it. So now, of course, we put our musical song in the high school auditorium. And hopefully that we could have a new concert hall in the auditorium soon. College, but that's will be probably a few years from now. I enjoy this old theater a great deal.
What were the churches like when you first came?
Now we had of course the community is very much in the majority of Catholicism. I mean, you have the two lovely Catholic churches here, and the Congregational Church was one of the older churches that was located down on B Street, and I was a member of the Congregational Church, and was quite active in the music circles, the choir director. So we had a small Baptist church, and then the Episcopal Church was another church that was just a small church, but it was a remodeled and built. It's the old stone church there on the on B Street, and the Second Street, I guess it is. And I'll never forget the gentleman that when I first came to Rock Springs, Mr. Tolliver was his name, Arthur V. Tolliver, and he did a lot of the masonry and the breaking up the stone. And every evening after work, he was an attorney. He would go by and place two or three more of those huge stones in place. And it was years in the making, but it's beautiful, sturdy churches we now see it. But it was done by mostly just the lay people of the church who did most of that work as far as the stonework was concerned. And then, of course, a couple of other landmarks in our community, the Spiti of Stone was the Tolliver residence up on the hill here, and the old castle it was called, which was built by an old German who came here before my time, but my husband told about how this old gentleman gave her a little money and decided to build some of the these two big buildings, and apparently did an awful lot of the designing of these two buildings. They still stand very, very strong and hale and hearty, apparently. They were very well built, apparently. They've been occupied for quite a time. Governor Hamm was in the penthouse of one of the old buildings there at the St. Paul Castle.
I haven't seen that. I'll have to see it.
It's very ornate. I mean, Mr. and Mrs. Tolliver were very outstanding early settlers here in Rock Springs. And I guess it'd be the grandson now, and his wife, Mary. His name is Bill and Mary, and their children live there at the stone building. You can see out my patio door there, the building there. And they have retained all of the old furnishings. It's really a very ornate building. One should try to go through it sometime, because Mrs. Tolliver was very gracious in taking people through her house and seeing the old furnishings and beautiful china and silver and things that belonged to her husband's grandparents.
I was noticing when I came in, you have a lovely platform marker.
Yes, now that is my husband's father brought that here from Illinois, and it's really an antique piece. Now it's I've had so many people remark about that platform marker. I had it to refinish. It had an old black leather bottom on it and in the back where it now has the petty point covering. But that was one that my husband said that they shipped that on the Union Pacific Railroad, and they really were so very afraid that it was going to get damaged. It doesn't go back quite as far as the old push carts that they brought across the desert, but it was shipped on the rail car, and I know they were quite concerned whether or not it was going to arrive safely. But it is a true piece, and it's probably at least 150 years old, because it was in the vein of my husband's parents.
It's a very lovely piece of furniture.
Thank you.
Was it very hard to get supplies and things to Rock Springs when you first came here? You said that had to be shipped out here. What about your everyday things?
Well,
this is kind of a desert.
We seem to, we had that quite, of course, the old Lincoln Highway was turned into Highway 40, you probably have read of that. And so we had trucks that brought a lot of the produce in from Salt Lake City, where they were able to grow crops. But they were a little bit more scarce and difficult to acquire. But I think the railroad brought most of those things in too. So we never, that I know of, had any shortages in that respect. But a number of the people, through a lot of care and I'm sure the sweat of their brow, would try to raise a little garden and have tomatoes. I recall it was kind of a scarce item. We all appreciated when our neighbors could have a garden and share their vegetables with us.
What was it like to get things like clothing, furniture, things like that out here?
I think that it seemed to me that everybody always seemed to have a good supply of those kind of things. I think that the stores were able to. We had, I recall, the Union Pacific Coal Company had their store that they provided materials. I think you may have remembered some of the old song, The 14 Tons, where everybody owed their lives to the company store. Well, these company stores were provided by the Union Pacific Coal Company. Really had quite a monopoly, actually, when they first came here to Rock Springs, because they gave these miners credit, you know, and they were, just as the song says, that they really did oftentimes have to just pay as they got their checks at the end of the 2 week period, where they would go down and pay their bill and then start again on their on the credit, getting their supplies. But I think that this first story, it was down on the corner as you go out of town, I think it's kind of beautiful, you know, where the old store is located. And it was only about 10 years ago, it's really from there now, that it went out of business. And then they had the Union Merc, which was another general store, general merchandise. So, of course, those have gone. It was bankrupt, at least they were closed down. And now it's been taken over by the numerous stores in the mall, right, Mountain Mall.
You said you got married here. Did you have a church wedding?
I was married, my brother's home in Evanston, by the Congregational Minister. The Congregational Church Minister decided he would go over and conduct the wedding at my brother's home.
So you had your family with you?
Yes. Yeah. And everybody laughed at us because my husband's mother was not at all well. She was just a tiny little lady that everybody said was kind of like a little Dresden China doll. She was so petite, an English lady. And so she went over with us for the wedding, of course. And my husband had one other brother from California who came for the wedding. And then my family, two brothers here and my mother, and so we had quite a lovely wedding. And then when it came time to we were going to leave to go to Salt Lake for our little honeymoon, my Art's mother, Mrs. Anderson, decided she wanted to go with us. So we took Art's mother on our honeymoon with us. Everybody thought that was really strange, but she had some relatives and friends in Salt Lake City that she wanted to visit. So we left her off at Salt Lake, and then we went on to California for a couple of weeks. But when we left Evanston, I had some nieces and nephews that thought they would really get us off to a royal send-off, you know, as so many people do when they send the bride and groom off. And they had the tin cans and all the other things hanging on the car. And Art's mother, Mrs. Anderson, was just a little perturbed because we were had so much noise in the car, and she was a little nervous about it. And I replied, "Well, after all, you're on the honeymoon." So she didn't have much of a reply to that.
Have you noticed any change between people's attitudes when you came and during the time of the boom and now? I mean, the local people.
Well, I really think that there is a little feeling that I'm sure that there's a little feeling of some relief, possibly, because there were some conditions that we felt, and whenever, I think that maybe it isn't a fair statement to make, but whenever you have an influx of a population, we did have more difficulties as far as our the police conditions, the criminal inclinations of when you have people being put together in close confines, or quite a lot of robberies. I know we used to say we never locked a door when we first came to Rock Springs. We didn't know the meaning of being afraid to go out at night after dark. But we became quite aware of some of the dangers. And of course, I think most everyone who has read a paper probably remember the little problems that we had here during the time when our town was labeled the Sin City, you may recall, where the 60-minute radio or the TV show came in and investigated it, and have many of us felt a very unfair survey of, as far as their investigation was concerned. I think they saw the seamiest side of our town, and it was pretty unfair, we thought. But there did exist quite a little problem of people having difficulty with crime and with robberies and that type of thing. I know that it was quite new and startling to us when we be told that we should put locks on our doors. And of course, I think everybody had experiences with some of it. And I even had a little difficulty with somebody. This house was built in 1960. And shortly after that, about years in the later 60s and 70s, when so many people were coming into our city. Someone I always, after my husband died, go back to Kansas to visit during the summer months. Oftentimes left the house for weeks at a time, and a couple of times we had someone broke into the house. And so I became very cautious, and we did put on extra locks. And it was too bad, because I think that we did have such an open, trusting feeling in the community. I think that doesn't exist any longer. I think that people are a little more cautious about taking care of their property as far as putting things in the lock and key.
How about their attitudes? Are their attitudes towards people the same as they were?
No, I really think it was a host of situation. I really felt that these people coming in, at first I think a lot of the old timers rather frowned upon the idea of new people coming in, because they've been rather self-satisfied with our lot here, and they figured that, why should they come in? But they realized, of course, I think that they brought in a lot of wealth as far as, the economy certainly has improved a great deal, because there were stores had to have more merchandise, to accommodate the people coming in. But the traffic downtown, people would complain about it was so hard to drive down the streets now because there were so many people driving. And of course, they didn't have street lights when we first came, as far as signal lights, And so many of the old timers had difficulty. I know we had two or three of the old timers that were still driving their cars down the streets, and they were people that would say that we better go in the other direction because here comes Mr. So-and-so driving. Is that they probably wouldn't be able to be driving now. There's one gentleman in particular, Mr. Boyce, who was one of our bankers here, and he would get in his little roadster car, a sport model car. And as he got older, he really took both sides of the street, and everybody really had to beware of him coming down the street because it was really quite a hazard. And I'm sure that he would live in the present time, he wouldn't be allowed to drive his car. And he drove until he really was a threat, I think, to other people driving.
About when town finally gets street lights, traffic lights.
Well, I think it probably was in the 40s and 50s when I first came to Rock Springs. Many of the sidewalks were completed, but a lot of the side streets were unpaved, so it was a pretty rugged looking place. Since he was born here, he saw great strides in improvement, of course, and then we tell about some of the heads of the University of Maryland, the depot now is located. He had where the overpass, of course, there's an underpass there. That was the main crossing of the street that no longer had the street through the moment. I recall that was C Street. And C Street was a very busy street. And in the times of the springtime, we had the flowers coming out from the mountains. roads here. And quite a lot of water that would run down the streets. And the horses and wagons would be a the streets that they would have or some of the pretty bad shape roads. I don't remember those other than just what she has told me. But the one little anecdote that she told me I thought was really interesting is that you live rather close there on B Street by the Eagles. Hall in the house was downtown. And there were Indians who came down from Pocatello at that time from the reservations, and they would come in this far south, which kind of surprised me. They would come down here and bring their beaded materials, their moccasins various types of purses and things of that sort that they would sell. And so they always stopped at Mrs. Anderson's home, and that's all it's better than that. And they would come there, and some of the town people would come and buy these little items. Mrs. Anderson would make, there's one Indian that they call Indian Maggie, and she always stayed with Mrs. Anderson, and Mrs. Anderson would make her house dresses. She liked to wear the American type of house dresses. So she would, in return, she would get little moccasins and beaded gloves and things of that sort, which I still have some of them. I took some of them over to the museum for Mr. Chatty to put on display. I thought maybe that Mark would enjoy them there.
The museum you were talking about, is that over the village?
Yes, that's the county museum. And they have some very interesting little artifacts of the Indian folklore there. It's most interesting to see. I added a few of the things that my husband's folks had that I thought would add a little to the collection.
Now I'm going to get kind of personal. Mm-hmm. You said a little while ago that an unfavorable report by 60 Minutes showed that there was a seamy side to a town. Was that just during the boom, or was there a seamy side to town before the boom too?
Well, I think like most towns, there's almost a block of the, we somehow call the red light district, and a place where the prostitutes reside. And I'm sure that that existed all of, you know, since the very beginning of the town when the coal miners were there, because along the front street they would have the houses there. But I don't think that they really were any great menace until we did have this great number of people, the population coming in, and the little bars. I know at one time they said that Rock Springs had more bars than along Front Street than any town in existence, that they were just about every other door you'd find a beer jar. But most of us that didn't frequent that part of town, you know, it was just a part to where we weren't quite aware of what was going on. But I think that
kind of closed your eyes to it.
Pardon me?
Kind of closed your eyes
to it. I think so.
Yes,
I think that's true. And I think that probably they thought that was one of the things that was just accepted as a matter of fact, that we didn't bother us, because they kept it to their business. It didn't create any problems.
You didn't have a need for their services, and
that's,
vice versa.
That's correct.
Okay. I don't want to keep you too long. I've enjoyed the talk.
Well, thank you. I feel like maybe I've been stuttering and stammering a little bit, but I hope that I've given you the material that will be helpful to you.
I think so. I found it interesting. I hope others will too.
Yeah, thank you. I hope so.
I enjoyed it. I can kind of see through your eyes. The bareness and how much more it looks like a desert than it does.
Right.
It looks like a very large community, and we came into it. It doesn't look as bare as what you must have seen.
Yes, it was. I really had the feeling when you mentioned that it was rather bleak at first. I thought, but as to kind of get accustomed to things, I guess. I've always felt that I could kind of roll with a punch, but I can understand why some people who come here, it really is very depressing for some people.
Thank you.
Thank you.